take it.
LA Girl, take one.
And you're listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nardwuar Human Serviette Radio Show. And who do we have on the line right now? Hello, caller, are you there?
I believe I am, yes.
And who are you, caller? Who are you?
Well, I've been trying to figure that out myself for the last day or two, but I've come to the conclusion that I'm going to stick with Steve Soto. From the adolescents.
And Steve, thank you very much for phoning into the Nardwuar Human Serviette Radio Show here. A couple weeks ago, we tried to connect with you, but it didn't quite happen. But you did play Vancouver. What happened that day?
We got detained at the border for smuggling young children across the border into your country.
So did that make the gig even better when you finally made it into Vancouver? How did the gig go, Steve Soto of the adolescents?
The gig was wonderful. The good people of Vancouver were good to us. It was a win-win all the way around. And, yeah, it was great. But we turned around and left the second we were done. No offense to Vancouver. But, hey, the border crossing just left us a little frayed, to say the least.
And, Steve, how did the gig at Richards on Richards compare with the other gig you played there a couple months previously that I saw with punk rock karaoke? How did the punk rock karaoke gig differ with the adolescence gig that you played?
Well, the punk rock karaoke gig was fun, but the adolescent gig, I think there was more people. There was a little more excitement. I don't know. It just, I'd rather be playing my own songs than someone else's.
It was very exciting, though, I thought, at Punk Rock Karaoke in the Vancouver edition, with guys going crazy, like not even singing the words, just like thrashing on the stage. Is that a normal thing for Punk Rock Karaoke, or is that Vancouver-centered?
No, you know, you'd be surprised. Those guys come out of woodwork all the time, all over the country, and our country and your country. Yeah, that's the best part about being in Punk Rock Karaoke is, if someone comes up and sings a song well, like, that's okay. But if someone comes up and rolls around on the ground and, you know, pours beer all over themselves, that's actually fun.
Yeah, you didn't seem too fazed by it, although Eric seemed a tiny bit fazed. I don't know if Vancouver was good or bad in that respect. You're saying it's always like that. But it did seem like he was a bit fazed slightly with people just totally thrashing. I guess throwing the mics around isn't too good when it hits you in the face, right?
Well, yeah, that can be bad. But we did a show one time where a girl was masturbating while we were playing and she was singing, and that was comedy, you know?
And you are Steve Soto of the Adolescents. And Steve, we began the Nardwuar Human Serviette radio show here today with a song, L.A. Girl. Who was in the Adolescents then? And did you perform that show a couple weeks ago?
The Adolescents then was Tony, Frank, and I, and Rick Agnew and Casey Royer. And they, Rick and Casey, are no longer part of our pop combo. But the rest of the band is still intact. Although Frank Agnew didn't play in Vancouver and a couple of the shows on the West Coast because he had a bad knee, being an older man. He was having some knee trouble. So he had surgery on his knee. And we had a 15-year-old kid named Joe Harrison filled in on guitar for us.
How long did it take him to learn the stuff?
He knew it already. He was in a band called Wrecking Crew, named after one of our songs, and he had been on our website posting like guitar tabs and showing other kids how to play our songs. So we kind of stumbled on him, and we saw his band. They played with us a couple times, so we knew he was good. And he walked in and won rehearsal and knew all. He probably knows the songs better than we do.
Did you do any extra songs with him since he knew all the songs that maybe you wouldn't have done normally?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we did. We never played I Hate Children since we've been back together, and we added that one in. And especially for him, because he got on our nerves. So it's kind of an ode to Joe.
Steve Soto of the Adolescents, will the real Adolescents please stand up? What exactly is going on? There was something going on with your MySpace page. Will the real Adolescents please stand up? What was that about?
Well, originally what it was is when Tony first went on MySpace, there was a guy that had a page that said he was Tony, like a Tony Cadena page. And then there was an Adolescents page up. And so Tony was trying to contact both of them, saying, like, I don't care that you're doing this, but give me access, especially to the one that was saying that they were Tony. And he was they would never respond to him. So in turn, Tony started, our own page for the Adolescents and a Tony Reflex page. So people that he knows, like, he would see posts from people over the years that he'd met, but, he wasn't able to respond to them because he couldn't get some of their mail and things like that. So he tried to go through the proper channels at MySpace to find out who it was, and they protect everybody there. So he started his own thing.
How about you personally, Steve Soto? Have you ever been subjected to identity theft at all, Steve?
As a matter of fact, there's two guys I know named Steve Soto that I've met over the years, and one of them, ran down that he used to pick up girls by saying he was me, and I've never been able to get girls by saying I was me, so I was surprised that he was able to, so I was kind of pissed off.
Ba-boom! And you are Steve Soto of the Adolescents, and looking what the Adolescents have done recently, you guys played Vegas's 100th birthday party to, 50,000 people. What was that all about?
That was actually John Frusciante from the Red Hot Chili Peppers is a big fan of our band, and he got us on that show, and that's pretty weird. It was hot, and there was lots of kids, but I think we got to about half of them, and the other half just wanted to hear Weezer, who was on next.
Like Weezer, the Chili Peppers, and the Adolescents, which really isn't too strange because you have played with Weezer before, haven't you? Didn't Weezer back up one of your other bands?
Weezer used to open up for this band I was in called Joyride before they were famous. And then when they got famous, they forgot they ever knew me.
So you had no interaction at all with the Weezer crew?
No, not at all. Even at this show, none of them poked their head in and say hi or anything.
How about the Chili Peppers, aside from John, like Flea? Did he ever see you back in the day? Do you remember Flea back then?
Yeah, no, totally. They were all, I know Flea and Anthony had seen the Adolescents back in the in the day, and
do you hate that expression, Steve?
Yeah,
back
I
in the day.
Did you hear how I didn't want to use it, and then I just kind of did because I didn't know what else to say?
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm sorry I kind of used that expression. It this sounds so nice, but anyways, yes. I guess I was just curious about the Red Hot Chili Peppers. The early when did they start playing? Like you were doing the Adolescents quite before them, weren't you?
Right. We had already broke up when they started, but I used to see them play around Hollywood. They were a great live band. And Flea used to play with Fear, too, so we knew him from, like, that camp also.
How many of your friends are millionaires, Steve Soto of the Adolescents?
I got a few friends that are probably fall into that category.
I find it interesting. Pat Smear. Were you in the Adolescents when Pat Smear was in the Adolescents? Didn't you cross paths with Pat Smear somewhere?
Oh, yeah, I see Pat every now and then. I just, trying to think of the last. I saw him in Hollywood probably a year or two ago. And I ran into him when he was in the Foo Fighters also.
Did you just call them the Fruit Fighters?
No, you did. No, you did.
Did I mishear you, Steve Soto?
You must have.
Okay, yes.
I'm a big fan of the Foo Fighters. Chris Shiflett, their guitar player now, was in 22 Jacks with me for a few years, so. And Chris from No Use for a Name. So, I like the Fruit Fighters.
Pat Smear, was he really working at, like, the SST store there on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, and he got the call from Kurt Cobain, and he didn't even know who Kurt Cobain was? Like, he was just working at the SST store, and the next thing you know, he was playing with Nirvana. Is that true?
I know it's true. I remember when Pat worked at the store. Whether or not he didn't know who they are, I'm not sure. But I know that he went from working at the SST store to, yeah, being in Nirvana. That's quite a jump.
Because there wasn't a lot happening at that time, and I give credit for Nirvana for doing that, you know, for going after Pat Smear. I think they also went after that guy, Big John, who used to be, like, a guitar tech with, like, the Exploited or UK Subs or something like that. I think they asked him to play second guitar, and it didn't quite work out, but it was good with Kurt going back to the classic punk. And speaking of the classic punk there, Steve Soto of the Adolescents, and actually we're speaking here live to Steve Soto from the Adolescents, who played Vancouver a couple weeks ago. If anybody has any questions for Steve, it's 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. Or if anybody has any questions for Steve about L.A. punk rock trivia back in the day, millionaires, Steve will be happy to take your calls at 604-822-2487, UBC-CITR. Now, speaking of Exploited and kind of crust punk and stuff, you guys also played another huge gig, the Inland Invasion with GBH.
Yes, we did.
What was
I will admit that I didn't even watch. I never was a big GBH fan. I was more into like the English punk I liked was the original, like the early stuff, like the Damned and Generation X, and more I was into Southern California punk rock. Back in the day. I wanted to listen to records of bands that I could go see that weekend. You know, there was that immediate gratification of being able to see a band live that you'd been listening to their record all week. So, the Circle Jerks, TSOL, Black Flag, you know, even the Dead Kennedys who were from San Francisco. It was those bands were the bands that I listened to more than GBH.
Did you play with many English bands at all, though?
No, you know, they didn't start, like, the guy named Gary Tovar from Golden Voice was the promotion company, was the first one to really bring those bands over from England, and he didn't start doing that until after we had already broken up. So, and then maybe in the later 80s when we were back together, I think even then I don't think we did. We toured, we played with the Bad Brains and we did some shows with the Ramones. We did some stuff with New York bands, but never really English bands.
Speaking of the Ramones, have you seen that documentary that just came out, or came out a little while back there, Steve?
Yeah, the end of the century, or...
Yeah, did you see any friction between Mr. Ramone and Mr. Ramone there?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I did, and I've seen that firsthand. When I played in 22 Jacks, we did some recording with Joey, And one night we went to the Roxy in Los Angeles with Joey and to see the Tom Tom Club, which was people from the Talking Heads. And Johnny was there, and they were within like 2 feet the whole night. And Johnny ended up leaving early because Joey was there hanging out. But yeah, there's plenty of tension there.
Steve Soto of the Adolescents, what did the UK punk bands, maybe you weren't playing with them at the time, like in the early 80s, but what did they think of the local California bands? Would the local California bands get paid any money?
Well, we never made any money back then. We played a show with Stiff Little Fingers, and they weren't too kind to the young Southern California boys. As a matter of fact, they threw us out of their dressing room when we went in to try to, like, meet them. And I believe even later when, like, there was a review of the show or no, it was a Flipside interview. And they said the Adolescents are a joke. And that cut us deep because we like Stiff Little Fingers.
But you probably like joking, too, don't you?
Right. But I don't think they were.
Steve, what about Black Flag? When the Adolescents played with Black Flag, how much would you get paid, and how much would Black Flag get paid?
I don't know how much Black Flag would get paid, but I would wager to say a lot more than we did. We were all 14 and 15, 16 years old, and so I don't think that I know we weren't smart enough to, like, like, if we made $100, we thought that was a big deal. And I'm sure that they were making a lot more than that. That was why we were probably on a lot of shows with them, because, you know, if you could get a bunch of dumb kids to come play for nothing, you know, and bring all their friends, we drew.
Steve Soto of the Adolescents, and again we're speaking here live to Steve Soto from the Adolescents. If you have any questions to Steve, it's 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. You also played, which is really amazing I find, with the Canadian Subhumans. Do you remember that gig at all?
Vaguely. Back then I probably drank too much hard liquor. But I remember the Subhumans there, and they were and still are a great band. I remember more, we played a lot of shows with DOA back then. If there was a Canadian band that we were actually, you know, closer to, I'd say it was DOA. And we played some of the bigger shows that we did. In fact, with the Stiff Little Fingers, it was us and DOA and Stiff Little Fingers. And DOA played on a show we did with Black Flag and the Minutemen that was a really big show right when SoCal Punk was really starting to take off, and it was at a huge arena. And back when Randy Rampage, in fact, Randy Rampage was with, it was Randy and I and Dennis from Social Distortion that got thrown out of the Stiff Little Fingers dressing room.
Was that at the Olympic? One of those giant Olympic gigs?
No, that, well, the Stiff Little Fingers one was at a place called Perkins Palace in Pasadena. But the big show that we did with Black Flag and DOA was at Santa Monica Civic Center.
No, that sounds like a huge gig. That sounds huge.
It was like 3,000 plus people. And, just recently, I was at my parents. My dad had a bunch of old press clippings that he showed me that he'd saved of our band over the years. And one of them was from that show. There was a big article in the L.A. Times on us, you know, because it was like the biggest punk show L.A. had had up to that point.
So punk rock really wasn't too underground at that point, was it?
Not by, like, that was the summer of 81. It was definitely rearing its head, but because of the violent aspect and, like, with Black Flag especially, with the police, they tamed it real fast. It didn't really have a good chance to grow because right around the middle of 81, they started putting a lot of pressure on venues to not have big punk rock shows. And so it kind of burned out for a little while until another year or so later, and then the Olympics started putting on shows, and it kind of came up again.
The Olympic just fascinates me. Just the huge gigs that happen there. What is the biggest circle pit that you've ever seen, Steve Soto of the Adolescents?
I think the biggest ones I've ever seen are some of the festivals I've been at in Europe. The biggest one I've seen where we played was the Inland Invasion, definitely. There was probably about three pits. We probably played that day in front of 25,000 people. And I'd say there was at least 10,000 of them in the pit.
Was the K-Rock Inland Invasion a K-Rock thing? Was it K-Rock's Inland Invasion?
Pardon me?
Was it K-Rock's Inland Invasion?
Yes, yes.
At one time, did you guys actually have a hit on K-Rock? Like, was Amoeba a hit on K-Rock, Steve Soto of the Adolescents?
Yes, it was. It was,
Like, how much play would it get? Like, is this, like, every hour it would get played? How does it compare to, like, having a hit nowadays?
I would say we got played probably every 3 hours throughout the day. I know at one point it was the number one song on the playlist for K-Rock. And what it was back then, K-Rock wasn't the station that it is today. Yeah, you know, it was a lot smaller at the time, and but yeah, we had started out just on Rodney on the Rock. Like, Rodney had a show, and then the daytime DJ started picking it up, and yeah, there was a little while there where it was on all the time, and we went from being that punk rock band to that radio band. And
did that translate to sales at all?
You know, we broke up right after, like, that all happened. So it started to, and then we just, you know, the band self-imploded, and there was really no more momentum, so.
Were there major label offers at that time? Were there any slimy major label execs that wanted to jump upon that? Or were the major labels staying totally away from that? I've seen some interviews with TSOL, and Jack Grisham says, you know, they were playing to 3,000 people, and the major labels still wouldn't want to touch them at all. They'd never go to the gigs.
Right. Yeah, no, they weren't interested. I remember hearing rumors that someone from A&M was looking at the Circle Jerks at some point. But that was, you know, that never panned out back then. And, yeah, no, they totally steered clear of it. Which is funny now, because if any band that got, like an independent band that got on K-Rock the way we did, now would have, you know, signed like a six-figure deal, no problem, you know.
But they wouldn't be rocking like 20 years later,
exactly,
would they, Steve Soto of the Adolescents?
That's how bands get destroyed.
And you were Steve Soto of the Adolescents, and you were very young at that time, weren't you, Steve? How young were you guys? You were saying like 14, was it really 14 or 15? Were they the youngest band in L.A.? Wasn't there some other young band like Mad Parade or something like that?
Well, the singer Mad Parade was very young. Steve McDonald, the Red Cross, was younger than us. But I was 16, and Tony was 17, and Frank was 15 when we were doing the Adolescents. And I actually, when I played at Agent Orange before that, like, yeah, I was 14 the first time, like when we recorded Bloodstains. So we were all pretty young.
Was there any pressure from your parents? Because I read an interview, something about Tony from your band refusing to change the word fuck to suck.
Right. Yeah, there's definitely,
like, your parents wanted the radio hit to get even more radio hitty.
Well, it wasn't my parents. My parents stayed out of it. It was Mr. Agnew. Yeah, he actually told Tony, "You're going to ruin my son's career." And you know, we were just like, we don't really have a career, so how can we ruin anything like that? You know, and yeah, there was pressure definitely from them to.
When did you finally make it to Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, in the Adolescents or any of your bands? Like, how many times have you been to Vancouver playing gigs there, Steve? Like, you played a couple weeks ago with the Adolescents, you did the punk rock karaoke. How many times have you been to Vancouver over the years?
I was up, we were in Vancouver a lot of times with 22 Jacks. And then before that I was in a band called Joyride, and we made it up to Vancouver probably five or six times. We used to play at the Town Pump all the time. That was where we played when we came up there. And then the Adolescents, I think we're only there one other time that I can remember. And back then, like, we toured from 85 to 90 or 86 to 90, but it's really, it's cloudy at best.
You had a bit of a Vancouver connection, though, because I think you or the Adolescents were on Dr. Dream Records, and Dr.
Right.
Dream had Bob's your uncle from Vancouver, British Columbia,
right.
Canada.
Right.
The good old Dr. Dream record label. What was going on with Dr. Dream?
That was, Joyride was on Dr. Dream, and so was that band, the Cadillac Tramps, and that's who brought us up to Vancouver. Like, they used to play there all the time, and that was our Vancouver connection was coming through with the Cadillac Tramps and Dr. Dream, you know, footing the bill for that one. They're no longer a label anymore, though. They were bought up by Mercury Records, actually.
So what happens to the back catalog?
I went in and took all our tapes, all the Joyride tapes, and Manic Hispanic. I'm in that band, too. I took all the tapes that I had before they, like, turned everything over. So, the Manic stuff we reissued, the Joyride stuff we never did, so you just can't get it, but... Mercury didn't put any of those records out. They wouldn't have anyway. They sat on the tapes, so we stole them.
Steve Soto of the Adolescents, what other A-bands from California did you like? Like the Authorities. Did you like the Authorities with I Hate Cops?
No, but I like the Avengers. And they had We Are the One. And I liked... That's Steve from California.
Did you see the Avengers? Were you old enough to see the Avengers?
No, I never got to see them back in the day. But I went to...
Notice I avoided saying that.
I appreciate that.
I guess it was...
I went to high school with Danny Furious from the Avengers. I went to high school with his sister. So we had like a weird Avengers connection, like... She would always keep us posted on what they were doing, like, after the fact, and I don't think she ever understood why there's, like, three or four, like, rabid guys who were like, what's your brother doing? Is he ever coming back to Fullerton?
Steve Soto, what about the other old-school L.A. bands, like the Screamers? I think you saw the Germs. Did you ever see the Screamers?
Never saw the Screamers. I saw the Germs quite a few times, and, in fact, the first Adolescent show that we ever played was with the Germs.
Was that a later era Germs? Is that kind of like Darby solo Germs almost?
No. It was the Darby, Pat, Lorna, and Don Germs.
Was that before or after the Decline movie?
Before.
Was there any chance that you would have made it in a Decline movie? Can we see you in a Decline movie anywhere?
I'm at the show. You can't see me, but I was at the show where I was at the Fear show, which also was the same show that the Alice Bag Band was in, and the Circle Jerks. That all happened in one night at the Fleetwood in Redondo Beach. And I'm trying to think of where the Black Flag stuff was shot. I'm not sure. I know I wasn't at the Germ show, but Tony was. And we were definitely going to shows and involved in the scene when that was being filmed. We came really close to making it into that movie, actually, as a band.
And what a moment that would have been, or would it have been a moment? Or how did it help the bands in that movie?
Well, I think that, you know, for someone that's not from Southern California that's getting into punk rock, if you see those movies, you know, that... you're obviously going to, like, look into the Circle Jerks or look into Black Flag or X. To, you know, I'm sure it helped in some point for people to discover them, people that weren't from around Southern California.
Steve Soto of the Adolescents, what do you think about this whole Dead Kennedys mess? I noticed that you share publicist with the Dead Kennedys. What do you think about this whole Dead Kennedys mess?
Well,
first off, does anybody care? Like, I know they played in Toronto recently, and I was talking to somebody, and they were at the gig, and they figured that all the kids going to this, like, skate gig didn't even know or didn't even care. It was just some old punk band. Do you think anybody cares anymore?
I don't know. To me, Jell-O is such an important part of that band, and his voice just, I mean, I'm friends with Brandon Cruz, and I've known him for a long time, and I was kind of, like, surprised when he did that, and his take on it was, someone's going to do it, I may as well go see the world and, you know, do this with them. It's hard for me to say because...
Have you played with the reunited Dead Kennedys post-Brandon Cruz? Because they have a new singer now.
Right. No, we haven't. And we steer clear of a lot of that, like they've wasted festivals or holidays in the sun. Like, I'd much rather go on our own tour or our own thing, our own shows, than be part of, like, the big nostalgic punk package.
Steve Soto, speaking of the nostalgic punk package.
That's quite a mouthful, isn't it?
It is. TSOL, Circle Jerks, I've mentioned all these guy hardcore bands. Were there any ever girl hardcore bands?
There was a band called Sin 34 that had a girl lead singer. I don't know if you'd call the Bags a hardcore band. They were definitely a punk band, but that was one of the first L.A. bands that I was really into. Frank and I played in a band called Legal Weapon right after the Adolescents that was started by Pat from the Bags. So there's definitely, back in the day, there was more women involved in punk rock than there, when hardcore came in, I think it kind of chased a lot of them out of it.
How come there weren't more female hardcore bands? Like, wouldn't it have been a good time for it?
I would think so. I don't know. I never understood it. It seemed, like I said, in the beginning, there was, like, the Alley Cats and the Germs. A lot of bands had at least, you know, one woman in the band. That, you know, there was, it seemed like girls were, you know, I saw the Go-Go's before they were millionaires, and they used to, you know, there was girls in bands, and then it just kind of dried up. It stopped. I don't really know the answer to that, except for that maybe the hardcore scene was way more testosterone-driven. I don't know. We broke up by then. So.
Did it get too violent? There's been some hints that it got this too violent. Not that women can't stand up for themselves as much as guys can, but I guess military dudes with shaved heads going in slam pits at the Olympic might be kind of intimidating.
Right. Yeah, I think that very well could have been a lot of it.
I think
that definitely killed it. And plus, you know, then, like, they watered down punk rock and had, like, all the new wave bands. Like, I remember a lot of girls, like, would rather go see Adam and the Ants than the Circle Jerks at some point, you know?
And I think we have a caller. Caller, are you there? Hello, caller.
Labrador.
Yes.
Well, you know what? I have a bad news, guys. You just went dead a whole video. I don't know what happened. I'm just calling to find out if you're alive.
Yes, we are still on the air.
Okay.
We're not coming through, Hans Klaus, then.
Maybe you can leave me on the phone so I can listen to the rest of the interview because the radio doesn't work.
Well, thank you for phoning in. Yeah,
I'm sorry to bring you the bad news. That's what it is.
Well, thank you, Hans, and doot-doot-a-loot-doo.
Doo-doo.
And you're still listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nardwater Human Serviette Radio Show. And we have Steve Soto from the Adolescents on the Nardwater Human Serviette Radio Show. What about rappers? Did you encounter any rappers at all, Steve?
Rap thing never was super big here like it was on the East Coast back in the day. where, like, you know, the Beastie Boys kind of crossed over with the Murphy's Law guys and all that. We didn't have any of that here. There wasn't a lot of that. Although Warren Fitzgerald from the Vandals, he was in a rap band called the Metal MCs.
Really?
That if you could ever dig that record up, it's a piece of work.
How about Suicidal, like Ice-T, N.W.A.? Wasn't there any crossover there?
Not in our camp. I mean, the Suicidal guys, I remember Mike from shows before. I mean, I think we had already broke up by the time they started playing a lot. Tony used to play with Suicidal when he was in The Abandoned. But I didn't really have much interaction with Mike at all, and definitely not with any of the rap bands.
Steve Soto of the Adolescents, Hollywood. Did you ever hang out at any of the Hollywood hangouts, like Errol Flynn's mansion?
Yeah, I've been up there and been to the Canterbury apartments to a party there.
Was there a lot of neat Hollywood stuff there just in disrepair in the 1970s, 80s that you could hang out as a punk? Was there a lot of neat stuff? Is any of that still there?
I haven't been up, like, been a lot of that stuff to see if it's still there, but in Chinatown, one of the first punk clubs that we used to play when I was in Agent Orange was in Chinatown. And
was that Madame Wong's?
No, it was at the Hong Kong Cafe. Madame Wong's was more for like the new wave bands, like the Knack and the Motels. We played a place called the Hong Kong Cafe, which was right across the courtyard. But it was interesting because, I mean, we're all from the suburbs in Orange County. So not only were we going to Hollywood or to Los Angeles, actually, for like the first time and going to these punk rock shows, but here they were in Chinatown, and it was like, it made it like that much more exotic to be up there and wandering around in this, you know, little part of town that, I don't know, it just kind of made it a little more appealing.
What was Errol Flynn's mansion like?
Well, we were just on the outside. I couldn't even give you that much. The basic, the premise of going up there was it was a place to drink and partake in chemicals. And being that I did a lot of that when I was there, I couldn't even give you any kind of description other than that it was up in the hills, and we never went in the house. We were just on the ground.
And again, who are you for the listeners out there?
My name is Nardwar.
Your name is Steve Soto
from the Adolescents.
From the Adolescents. Actually, aside from the Adolescents, what else are you rock with? Punk rock, karaoke, manic, Hispanic, anything else?
That's it right now. But I have played in Agent Orange, Legal Weapon, and I was in the Vandals for a couple of weeks, too. Little known fact.
Steve Soto, did you have any appearances on TV at all? For instance, I was talking to you about the Decline movie. Were you ever in an episode of Chips that has that band Pain?
We were the featured band on a TV show called Two on the... which was actually a very popular show.
Sorry, I just missed that. You just cut out for a second. What was the name of the show, Steve? Hello, Steve. Are you still there? Hello, Steve. Okay, we'll go to this caller right here. Hello, Steve. Hello?
Hi.
Hello. Hold on one sec. Hello.
Dodd-Wart.
Yes.
We're driving to Las Vegas right now. We're playing another show there this weekend, and I'm going into the mountains, and I think I'm losing you here.
Okay. Just was going to say, just quickly, Steve, what were you saying about the TV show that you were on?
We were on a show called Two on the Town, and a whole feature on punk rock, and And when they filmed it, they told us, you know, oh, yeah, we're just going to talk about the music, and now it's new and fresh. And so they filmed, you know, took footage of us playing live, and then interspersed it with, like, kids beating each other up and a woman saying that she was raped at a punk rock show. And, you know, of course, it made it all look real shady. And, yeah, all my mom's friends were calling her up going, I can't believe you're letting Steve go to these places. And it put a damper on my punk rock world for a little while.
Are you going to release any of that on a DVD?
You know, we're actually trying to put all that stuff together and get all kinds of, we have some, like, live shows and different things, and we're going to try by the beginning of next year to put out a DVD with all the old footage that we can find.
Agent Orange, that you were a founding member of, were you really a part of the psychedelic underground or the Paisley underground at all? Did you encounter any of those bands, you know, playing Greg Shaw's Cavern Club?
I remember the 3 o'clock, because they used to be called the Salvation Army, and that was about as close to it as, and the Bangles, before they were the Bangles, they were the Bang. And that was about, I never really thought that there was a big, I think, you know, they tried to make it seem like it was a big movement. But to me, they were just bands on the fringe of punk rock that didn't know what to call themselves.
It seemed to be, though, there was a great big mod scene, ska scene, like Untouchables and early No Doubt. Do you remember that period? Did you ever see any early?
I didn't have any part of that.
Did you ever see any early No Doubt at all, like really early No Doubt?
Well, we used to rehearse in the same building as No Doubt when I was in Joyride. So that was maybe 92, 91, 92, something like that. And so I remember, you know, we used to check Gwen out when she'd walk out to her car. We'd be sitting out there smoking cigarettes and oogling Gwen. We probably made her nervous.
Steve Soto, the influence, winding up here with Steve Soto of the Adolescents, the influence of the Adolescents. You know, you have that song Amoeba, and there's like Amoeba record stores. Do you think that that influenced the name of the store at all, Steve?
I've often wondered that. I'm not quite sure. I think that it did, but I could be wrong.
How have you been ripped off? How have the Adolescents been ripped off? For instance, I don't know if you saw in the news a little while back, Nike had a Major Threat tour. It was some skateboard thing, and it was like a ripoff of the Minor Threat logo. Have you been ripped off? Anything like that?
Not really. Not any of our, we haven't, nothing like that. Nothing on that level. That was pretty shady. I saw that, and, thought that was pretty out of line for Nike to do.
How about T-shirts? Like, I've seen Fat Mike wearing an Adolescence shirt for years. Was that from, well, I'm not going to say that word, but did he get that a long time ago, or is that a Gap thing? Are there many bootleg Adolescence shirts? Because that's a very popular shirt, you know, the blue one, the album cover.
Right. Well, yeah, Mike, I know the one that he wore all through the it was all during the
the 80s.
No, but the whole,
punk voter.
The punk voter whole thing. He, you know, I know he got that shirt at one of our shows in the last couple of years, but Mike's always been a big supporter of the band. And Mike and Eric, they used to go see us in San Francisco in the 80s, and not in the day, but the second time around when we were playing in 86, 87. And, you know, there's a lot of bands like that that have been real supportive. And when Lagwagon did their last, like, big photo thing for press photos, Joey was wearing an Adolescent shirt, and we got miles out of that, too. So I think that's a nice thing that our millionaire friends can do for us.
At one time there, Steve Soto, I read something about an entire football team wanting to fight Agent Orange and Social Distortion. Who won that fight, Agent Orange and Social Distortion versus a football team?
The football team won. I was part of that. Yeah, we didn't fare so well. But there's only like 6 of us. There's 30 of them.
Where did you guys fight? Were they wearing their equipment?
Now they are... Mike and Dennis and the drummer of Agent Orange, Scott, came to the high school that Mike Palm and I, the guitar player of Agent Orange, and I went to, and basically all the football players were not happy that more punks were showing up at their school. They were having a hard enough time putting up with us. So someone threw an apple that hit Ness, and he turned around and flipped off the whole football team. And they pretty much charged us, and it was a little bit of mayhem after that. And none of us were really that good of fighters, and they were all jocks, so it was kind of ugly. And thank God for the teachers that broke it up, or I probably would have lost a couple teeth after a little while.
Steve Sodal of the Adolescents, finally winding up here. You've crossed paths with so many different people. How about hair metal bands? Did you ever run into any hair metal bands from the L.A. scene? Like early Poison, early Guns N' Roses, early L.A. Guns. I mean, there's a famous story about Guns N' Roses playing in Seattle, Washington. Might even have been at the Crocodile Cafe, and the Fastbacks from Seattle backed them up, of course, because Duff from Guns N' Roses used to play in the Fastbacks,
right,
you know, in the Farts. And actually, believe it or not, Duff ended up giving his bass to Kim from the Fastbacks. So that was a very early Guns N' Roses gig when the Fastbacks, in fact, I think maybe even Guns N' Roses backed up the Fastbacks. Have you had any run-ins with any early hair metal bands? Because there was a lot happening then.
Well, I saw Guns N' Roses open up for my old roommate's band. They were a punk band. They were called Partners in Crime. They never really did anything or put out any records, but Guns N' Roses opened for them one night, and an old friend of mine was engaged to Brett from Poison until they got really famous, and then he dumped her and went chasing after supermodels. And the Circle Jerks used to rehearse next door to Motley Crue, and on the tip from Greg Hudson, we went up to Hollywood one night, Frank Agnew and I, and Jay Bentley from Bad Religion, and went to the Whiskey and saw Motley Crue play, but I never bought into any of that very much at all. My favorite, like, rock band meeting, though, one time in Seattle, when grunge was getting really big, a friend of mine was in town, and he saw that we were playing when I was in Joyride, and he brought, he used to work for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and he brought Chad with him to the show, and Stone Gossard from Pearl Jam. So at the end of our set, like, we let them take over our gear, and they got up and started playing, and they were playing Van Halen covers, and a guy came out of the audience and did a note-for-note perfect rendition of Eruption. So afterwards, we're sitting in the dressing room, and I'm talking to this guy, and I have no clue who he is. I just thought he was a good guitar player, and I asked him if he played in the band, and he said, yeah. And because I was like, yeah, you seem like you're pretty good. What band are you in? And he said, I'm Mike McCready from Pearl Jam. And I don't watch MTV, and I didn't know any of that. And it was just funny because, like, I had, you know, we were both just laughing because, like, at the time they were one of the biggest bands in America, but being the old punker that I am, I detest MTV, and I had no idea who he was. But he was a nice guy.
And now you know where to go if you need a fill-in guitarist there, Steve Sodal of the Adolescents.
Now, we don't want those guys. We go after the 15-year-old kid from San Diego. You know why?
It's genius. They know everything.
Well, you can pay him in candy.
Ba-boom! Steve Sodal here. Lastly, horror rock. You were part of the horror rock thing, weren't you, as well? Like, what's the connection between Christian Death, the founding fathers of American goth rock? Or let me just rephrase this. If there had been no Christian Death, you're responsible for AFI, basically, right, aren't you?
Well, I never played in Christian Death, although I hung out with those guys. Frank and I went down there when they recorded that record. They can take the blame on that on their own. I was a friend.
Because Christian Death are just amazing. I mean, people love, like, AFI, love Christian Death.
Yeah. Alkaline Trio, Matt Skiba, big fan of Christian Death.
And you were right there at Ground Zero on the horror rock. What stopped you from jumping aboard the horror rock bandwagon, Steve Soto?
I don't think I look good in makeup, or I probably would have jumped in.
Because quite a few people did, didn't they? Like the Gun Club, kind of, maybe? Were they in on there, too? Or the celebrities?
They were, yeah, definitely on that tip. Celebrity skin, definitely. There's the Super Heroines. There's quite a few bands, at that time. That the original guitar player of Christian Death now has a book that he just released called The Wrecking Crew. That I haven't had a chance to pick up yet, but I guess it's about his struggles from punk rock into drug addiction into a baseball league. I don't know how he ties it all in, but I'm going to have to check it out.
Steve Soto, Orange County, where you're from. Lee Rocker from the Stray Cats is from Orange County?
Not originally, but I believe he does live there now, yes.
You got Big Sandy, you got Supernova, you got the Aquabats, and Fullerton, I think that's near where you live, it's like home of Fender guitars.
Did you
ever get any good Fender rare thrift shop stuff because, you know, that's where Fender is from?
When I was in Agent Orange, Mike Palm's brother used to work at Fender in the 60s. And we dug out all these amps out of his mom's garage that had just been laying around for years. Some vintage Fender stuff. But we never even thought about trying to get sponsored or anything back then. But Fullerton, not only, Fender, and then the Adolescents, Agent Orange, and Social Distortion, all from Fullerton. That's our hometown.
And what about the Dogtown movie? What did you think of the Dogtown movie documentaries and stuff?
I thought the documentary was better than the movie. But the movie was, you know, it was entertaining. I remember those guys. Mike Palm from Agent Orange was a skater. So we were kind of, you know, in tune with you know, like I knew who Tony Alva was and remember seeing him at shows and it was kind of a big deal because it was Tony Alva and, you know, so, I mean, we definitely knew who they were. When they released the Dogtown documentary, the Adolescents actually in Suicidal Tendencies played the release party for that. And while we were playing, Tony Alva waited till we went on stage to skate in the pool. He said he wanted to skate to the Adolescents.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Who told you that? Did you have, like, spies in the audience, or did he tell you that?
Someone from band told me that, but we talked to him. I mean, I've met Tony a lot of times, so, you know, after the show, he was like, yeah, I was skating while you guys were playing. That was great. It was very cool.
So what's the gig you're heading to tonight there, Steve?
Well, actually, tomorrow, the Adolescents are playing in Las Vegas again, are doing our own show this time, and it's part of a... It's kind of an offshoot of punk rock bowling that BYO does. Someone else is trying to start up a punk rock bowling in the summer kind of thing. I don't know much about that, but I just know that we're playing the show for it. And
do you think any of the 50,000 people that saw you a little while ago maybe will make it down to the gig?
That's what we're hoping. We're hoping if we could get, 50 of them. No, we have a good fan base in Las Vegas, so it's, even if none of those other people come, we'll be okay. But hopefully there'll be some people that turn up that normally didn't, you know, used to go see us.
Well, thanks so much for phoning into the Nardwuar to Human Serviette radio show. Really appreciate it, Steve. Anything else you want to add to the people out there at all?
I just want to say I love the good people of Canada. And I have a question for you, a Canadian question. Who is on the $10 bill? Who is that?
You know, I'm that poor that I don't have one on me right now.
Well, he looks kind of like Bill Maher, a comedian, an American comedian.
It could be Sir Wilfrid Laurier.
Okay.
But I will check that. You guys love our money, don't you?
Yeah, it's great. It's very colorful. It's very cool. I usually try to hang on to some of it when I come back home. Just to, you know. But I love the 10s because it's like having Bill Maher on money.
Have you ever been paid in fake money? I remember DOA, the first time you played San Francisco, I read about this in Joey Shithead's book. They were paid in, like, Monopoly money, something like that, which really isn't that really realistic, but still, they thought it was real American money. Have you been played in fake money at all there, Steve Soto of the Adolescents?
No, I haven't, but that's a good story. The first time, yeah, that could have happened. I don't know. I was on to you guys, though, when I came up there, so I'd seen some Canadian money before.
And we're going to end right now with the song Creatures. What can you tell the people about the song Creatures?
I think the song Creatures pretty much sums up the alienation that we were all feeling back then when, you know, you're kind of getting stomped on by the jocks and the cheerleaders and the upper socialites, you know, in our high school. We were angry kids, and I think that song kind of sums it up rather nicely. And any song that has, like, that many masturbation references is okay with me, too.
Well, thanks so much, Steve. Keep on rocking in the free world, and doot-doot-a-loot-doo.
You take care, Narwhal.
Almost Steve Soto of the Adolescents. Doot-doot-a-loot-doo.
Doot-doot.
I'm not accepted by my peers. So what? But you can answer by the quiz. That's right. The kids are high full of cheers. Cleaners, they say I'm going to my peers. Cleaners, I hate them all. Creatures, I hate all them. Creatures, I hate them all. Creatures, I do not have such a mistake. Oh, what? But you're not fitting to the fridge. Our class, pretend to see that they are late. Now, then, and then the subject of a game. Creatures, I hate them all. Creatures, I hate all them creatures. I'm not accepted by the peers. So what? If you can answer by the quiz, they're fine. The cheese are high full of cheers. Cleavers, the thing I'm so out of my ear. Cleavers, I hate them all creatures.
And you're still listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Narwhal Human Serviette Radio Show. Apparently, we are not on the air, but we're on the air over the internet. So, I thought I would do something. I thought I would give away some tickets to the New York Dolls! The New York Dolls, who are playing next Thursday night here in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. We have a pair of tickets to go see the New York Dolls and a free New York Dolls DVD for you to win. Now, what's interesting about this is, since we're not on the air, you know, on the air because something's not working properly, but we're on the internet, I've gone to the CITR webpage. I don't know if you guys are looking at the CITR webpage. Well, you probably are. Maybe you're going somewhere else. But now, if you're in front of your computer right now, just do this little thing with me. Go to CIT. See, I can talk to you directly now because we know we're not on the air. Unless we really are on the air, please phone up and tell us 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. But I understand that we are not actually on the air. We're only on the internet right now. So if you are on the internet right now, you're listening to us through the internet, so I can just like go on a total tangent and totally disregard everybody else that's listening because you're only listening on the computer. Okay, CITR.ca. Type that in, CITR.ca. Well, obviously you did probably to listen to the show. CITR.ca. Okay, now you've typed that in. Okay, you see our main page there. Hit the little refresh thing, just in case. God, I feel like one of those Dotto computer type dudes. Oh, okay, I hit refresh. And in the top right, you can see 12 active visitors. So, that means there's probably only 12 people, not only, there are importantly, does that even make sense? Importantly, there are 12 people listening right now to CITR, and the 12th caller will win free tickets to go see the New York Dolls next Thursday night. That's 604-822-247. That's 604-UBC-CITR. Let's refresh, if you guys are in front of CITR.ca. Let's hit the refresh button, or the home button, or whatever you can refresh it with. Oh, we're up to 14 active visitors now. Oh, thank you, because I guess you're all looking at the homepage now, because I'm telling you, look at the homepage. I think we can maximum have about 22 people visiting. But still, caller number 12 to 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. We'll win some free tickets to go see the New York Dolls next Thursday night, the Commodore Ballroom in Vancouver, and a New York Dolls DVD. And nobody is phoning in at this present time. Let's hit the reload button, refresh, and see how many people are on the site right now. We're still at 14. We are still at 14, and we have a caller. I was waiting for caller number 12, but I guess we're going to have to do with caller number 1. And again, you're listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And now that I have the opportunity to address you people listening on the internet, thank you, goddammit, for tuning in every week. I really appreciate that. Okay, I know maybe you tune in for Tyler's show, or maybe you're tuning in for the news afterwards, and I just happen to be in the way. But thank you, anyways, for listening. Oh, let's see if you're listening to my babble right now. We'll hit the refresh button on the internet, and we're down to 13! One person got bored of what I was saying and bailed. Oh, God, I'm sorry. But anyways, I was going to tell you, internet people, you can check out some old Nardwar shows at nardwar.com since you're on the internet. But I don't want you to leave that main page because there's 13 people on the main page. Actually, number 14, could you please go back? I'm looking here at the internet. Again, I'm addressing everybody right now because apparently we're not on the air, but we're only on the internet. If we actually are on the air, please phone in 604-822-247 at 604-UBC-CITR. Okay, we got a few calls, so maybe we are back on air. Maybe we're only on the internet, but I'm going to hit refresh. Let's see, are we back to 14 people listening? 13! Can't the one person just go to the homepage, please, or set CITR to your homepage, or whatever. I don't know how to do this thing. Just make it so there's 14 people. Why? I don't know. I just feel depressed. It's 13, and it's an unlucky number, and I just keep reloading, and it's still 13. Anyways, what I was going to say is, since this interview that I did a little while back there with Steve Soto maybe didn't go over the air, Hans Kloss phoned in to tell me he wasn't hearing it. Hans phones in every week to the Nardwar Human Serviette radio show. I think I might replay it in a couple of weeks. I hope you guys won't get mad by that. I might replay it like next week or something like that, or the week after that. I might replay the interview. So please don't get mad if I replay it, because people listening to CITR probably didn't hear the interview since it cut out. Anyways, right now we're going to continue on the Nardwar Human Serviette radio show with a track from a recently released comp called Garage Beat 66, and we're going to hear The Litter doing a cover of the Schmall Faces. Again, 604-822-2487, UBC-CITR 1. We want to know if CITR is on the air. And number 2, if you want to win some tickets to go see the New York Dolls next week at the Commodore Ballroom. This is The Litter on CITR, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Oh, and Johnny McDonald is on the cover of the $10 bill.
Take it right back. What you gonna do?
couple months ago, I did an interview with M.I.A., the rapper, the new rapper from Sri Lanka. She now lives in London. And I mentioned the American hardcore band M.I.A. from Las Vegas, where the Adolescents are playing tonight. So I thought I would play some M.I.A. from Not So Quiet on the Western Front. This is M.I.A., the hardcore version on CITR, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, the Nerd World of Human Serviette radio show. Still listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nardwuar Human Serviette Radio Show. During my interview with the Adolescents, we mentioned age, how they were very young, starting out like 14, 15, 16. There are still 14, 15, 16-year-olds making rock and roll music. So I thought we would play what contemporary 14-year-old teenagers sound like making rock and roll. This particular band here is called the Freakouts, and they are from Tacoma, Washington. And what is really cool is their aunt plays in Girl Trouble from Tacoma, Washington. But this is their band, the Freakouts of 14-year-olds. So this is the sound of 14 in the year 2005 versus the year 1980 when the Adolescents were around. Like, that's what 14 sounded like in the year 1980, the adolescence tracks we played. So here's the Freakouts with a Bone to Pick. And then after the Freakouts, something very exciting, hot into the CITR studios, something by a band called Doom East Van. You Will Die is the name of the CD, and it's Doom East Van. And the song we're going to hear is Repent Sinner. Interesting. If you've been around Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, I'm sure you've seen the sign Repent Sinner. So we're going to play the Freakouts, a band of 14-year-olds from Tacoma, Washington, Bone to Pick, and then followed up with Doom East Van, You Will Die, and the song Repent Sinner on CITR, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, the Nardwuar to Human Serviette radio show.
Thank you.